said she hadn't heard the news, hadn't had the time to choose a way to lose, but she believes. Gonna see the river man, gonna tell him all I can about the plan for light of time. If he tells me all he knows about the way his river flows and all night shows, summertime. Betty said she prayed today for the sky to blow away, or maybe stay. She wasn't sure, for when she thought of summer rain calling for lost the pain, stayed for love. Gonna see the river man, gonna tell him all I can about the band. If he tells me all he knows about the way his river flows, I don't suppose it's meant for me. Oh,
Nick Drake. Riverman. That's from Nick Drake's very first studio album, which he recorded in 1969. And that beautiful orchestration was by a man named Harry Robertson. What an interesting story, Nick Drake. Born on June 19th, right near the summer solstice, in 1948. Like so many of the musicians that I like to look into, he started to play music when he was very young. When he was about 16 years old, he plays piano in the school orchestra. And he also learns how to play the clarinet and the saxophone when he's only 16 years old. And he starts a band. It's called the Perfumed Gardeners. I love that. That's in 1965. And Nick is not really, he's not playing guitar at that point. He's playing the piano and sometimes alto sax. And he's singing a little bit. And this early band does a bunch of jazz standards and Yardbirds and interesting stuff like that. A lot of covers. He gets his first guitar when he's 17 years old. £13 he pays for his first acoustic guitar. And it's interesting because he begins experimenting immediately with open tuning and finger picking techniques. There's another musician that you might know, Richie Havens. When Richie Havens starts to play the guitar, he also starts to tune the guitar like to open chords. David Crosby and Joni Mitchell also experimented with these alternate guitar tunings. And what it does is Nick Drake used this thing called cluster tones, and he gets that very jazzy feel by the way he tunes his guitar. And then he uses those same cluster tones in his melodies. So he gets this very bluesy, jazzy, folk feel. It's interesting to look at his life because it reflects that search that so many musicians have for a place in the world. You know, there's great wealth and honor and fame for 0.009% of musicians, like 99.9% of the people in this world that attempt to have a career in music, you know, are rewarded with that kind of financial and cultural success. And Nick Drake longed for that, and it was a struggle for him. He gets a scholarship in 1966. When he's 18 years old, he gets a scholarship to study English literature at the University of Cambridge. He puts it off for a year. He goes to Morocco and hangs out for a while with his friends. Starts to play the guitar more and more, and he enrolls in Cambridge. He's living in his sister's flat in London while he's in Cambridge. And he really has a hard time concentrating on his studies. The memories of him in Cambridge were that he just wasn't really applying himself. But while he's there in college, he starts to listen to the music of Bob Dylan. You know, this is 1967. He's listening to Phil Oakes and Bob Dylan. He also meets a good friend of his while he's in college there, a guy named Robert Kirby, who was a music student. And Robert Kirby later worked with Nick Drake's woodwinds and string arrangements for a couple of his albums. So, you know, like so many people, Nick Drake takes his guitar and he starts playing in coffee houses. And that's when he gets spotted by the bass player from Fairport Convention, whose Fairport Convention was one of the instrumental bands in starting what they called folk rock. They started to look into the traditional songs of the British Isles and play them in these electric band arrangements and stand-up bass. Anyway, the bass player from Fairport Convention, Ashley Hutchings, brings Nick Drake to the attention of a man named Joe Boyd, who's only 25 years old at the time, and he was an American producer. And Joe Boyd has this record label called Witch Season Productions on Island Records. And not only was he working with Fairport Convention, but he was with the incredible string band, this guy Joe Boyd. So they start producing the very first album. He signs them. And Five Leaves Left was recorded at Sound Technique Studio in London. And it's interesting because Joe Boyd wants to copy the production style that was working with Leonard Cohen's first recordings at the time. So what that involves is there's no reverb on Nick's voice, which gives it a very upfront, intimate, jazzy, soft, breathy sort of a feel. And because Nick Drake was really just a solo singer and guitar player, he didn't really have his own band. Joe Boyd is the one that brought in the other musicians. And he gets the guitarist from the Fairport Convention, who he's already working with, Richard Thompson. And he gets the bass player from Pentangle, a man named Danny Thompson, to play stand-up bass. So that's Nick Drake's first album. Nick Drake only records three albums in his lifetime, in his short lifetime. The first one's called Five Leaves Left. That's 1968. And then in 1970, the next album is called Brighter Lighter. Let's listen to some more music from Nick Drake. We'll start with a song from his very first album called Five Leaves Left. And this song is called Cello Song. And it features the bass playing of Danny Thompson, the Pentangle bass player. Nick Drake, Cello Song.
Thank you. Could have been a sailor, could have been a cook. A real life lover, could have been a book. I could have been a signpost, could have been a clock. As simple as a kettle, steady as a rock. I could be here and now. I would be, I should be, but how? I could have been but what are these things first? I could have been but what are these things first? I could have been your pillar, could have been your dog. I could have stayed beside you, could have stayed for more. I could have been your statue, could have been your friend. A whole long lifetime could have been. Could be oh so true. I would be, I should be through and through. I could have been, but what are these things first? I could have been. So could have been a flute. A real life giver, could have been a boat. I could have been a signpost, could have been a clock. As simple as a kettle, steady as a rock. Could be different, yeah. I would be, I should be, so near. I could have been, but what are these things first? I could have been.
Things first. That's from Nick's second album called Brighter Lighter. It's spelled kind of funny, B-R-Y-T-E-R-L-A-Y-T-E-R, Brighter Lighter from 1970. And you can tell that it's a little bit more upbeat from his first album, and it's got kind of a jazzier, more upbeat sound. Nick Drake's first album sold less than 5,000 copies. That's not good. It's hard to understand how his music was perceived when it was first reviewed. Melody Maker called it poetic and interesting, but also that there was not nearly enough variety to make it entertaining. It did get some radio play, that first album, Five Leaves Left. Some of the BBC's jockeys, especially a man named John Peel, was playing a lot of Nick's music when it came out. After that first album, he leaves Cambridge just 9 months before he graduates in 1969. He just leaves college and really wants to focus on his music career. But he's couch surfing at that time. He was living with his sister, and he's just kind of stopping in at friends' sofas and floors. And so it was his producer, Joe Boyd, who actually gets an apartment for him and gets a telephone for him so that he has some kind of stability in his life. It was during that time that he starts, you know, he continues to play the live gigs, but it's really not the same experience hearing him live as it is with what he does in the studio. He was very shy. He was very introverted. And he was singing in folk clubs, and there was another performer on one of those performances with him, a folk singer named Michael Chapman, and he remembers what it was like with Nick, and here's what Michael Chapman had to say. The folkies did not take to him. They wanted songs with choruses. They completely missed the point. He didn't say a word the entire evening. It was actually quite painful to watch. I don't know what the audience expected. I mean, they must have known they weren't going to go get sea chanties and sing-alongs at a Nick Drake gig. So he stops doing live performances. His performances were just awkward and really poorly attended, and that did not help his album sales. But in spite of the poor showing on the first album, because of some of the positive reviews, Joe Boyd wants him to record the second album. We just heard a track from it, Brighter Lighter. And once again, the second album sells less than 3,000 copies. I just don't understand it. I don't understand why he didn't have a bigger reception in his own time. He did get some really good reviews. Record Mirror called him a beautiful guitarist with clean and perfect timing and beautiful arrangements. But Melody Maker calls the album an awkward mix of folk and cocktail jazz. That's a blow. That's really a blow. Since that time, there's been documentaries made and tribute albums and a total reassessment of Nick Drake's music. And in retrospective, he's garnered quite a following and he's had a lot of influence on the other musicians that heard him. Let's listen to another track from Nick Drake's second album, Brighter Lighter. This song is called Poor Boy. Nick Drake.
Let us sing for my supper. I never helped my neighbor. Never do what is proper. My fair share of labor. I'm a poor boy and I'm a rover. Count your coins and throw them over my shoulder. I may grow older. Nobody knows how cold it grows, and nobody sees how shaky my knees. Nobody cares how steep my stairs.
nobody smiles if you cross their styles.
Nick Drake, poor boy. That's from Nick's second album, Brighter Lighter, in 1970. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF. Right after that second album by Nick Drake was released, Joe Boyd, who had been his mentor and his producer, and had brought him to this incredible artistic moment in his life. Joe Boyd sells Witch Season Records. He sells it to Island Records. And he moves away from England. He moves to Los Angeles to work with Warner Brothers. And it was a hard thing for Nick to take, having Joe Boyd move away. And he begins to become depressed. He was already kind of introverted. But it becomes much more of a serious issue for him in his life. And he records one final album, which was released in 1972. Because Boyd had moved away, I don't know if that had something to do with it, possibly. He records one final album in 2 days, two nights of recording, with the engineer who had recorded his previous albums, a man named Wood. And it's just him and his guitar. No other instruments. No really big arrangements. It's a very short album. Very dark, called Pink Moon. And it doesn't do any better than the other two albums. He refuses to do any kind of marketing or promotion or do any interviews. He moves back to his parents' home, where he's living on this meager 20-pound-a-week retainer from Island Records. And he just seems to, like, fall apart. He just winds down. He was prescribed some antidepressant drugs. And it was in the autumn of 1974. He's upstairs. He was always a night owl. His mom said, you know, that he would keep these really strange hours. He'd be awake all night in the middle of the night, and that's when he would tune his guitar and write his songs. And he was up one night really late, and in the next morning she goes into his room and she finds him passed out and dead on his in his room. And he had taken too many antidepressants. And it was always, a lot of people feel that perhaps it was a suicide. And a lot of people that knew him felt that it was probably just accidental. He had a lot of hidden anger. And Joe Boyd talked about that. He said Joe Boyd did an autobiography for himself in 2006, and he talks about Drake's anger, and here's what Joe Boyd said. He said that I had told him he was a genius, and others had concurred. Why wasn't he famous and rich? This rage must have festered beneath that inexpressive exterior for years. So there was a lot of romanticism built up in retrospective about Nick Drake. You know, Lord Byron, that kind of dark, poetic figure. There's been a lot of work written about Nick Drake. Biographies, documentaries have been done. Rolling Stone's critic Anthony DeCurtis described Nick Drake's music, quote, as if he were viewing his life from a great, unbridgeable distance. Nick Drake, what an amazing legacy. At the same time that Nick Drake was recording and performing in England, there was a lot of interplay among a group of musicians, just like in any scene. There was a lot of interesting connections going on. And there's a band at the same time that Nick Drake was recording. You know, we talked about Fairport Convention, and there's a band called Pentangle. And their bass player, Danny Thompson, recorded with Nick Drake. So I thought it would be interesting to hear some of the Pentangle recordings from about that same time. They released their second album in 1969, the same year as Nick Drake's first album. And the album is called Basket of Light. And it features Danny Thompson on double bass. The woman singing lead vocals is Jackie McShee. a couple of other very well-known musicians in their own right. John Renborn is playing lead guitar and sitar. And Bert Jantz is also playing guitar and banjo and singing some background vocals. And Terry Cox on drums. Let's listen to the first track from the Basket of Light album by Pentangle. This is called Light Flight. Pentangle.
Let's get away, you say, find a better place. Miles and miles away from the city's rays. Look around for someone lying in the sunshine, marking time. Hear the sighs, close your eyes. Ba-da-ba-doo-da-da-da-ba-doo-da-da. Stepping from cloud to cloud, passing years of light.
Night.
Pentangle from their Basket of Light album from 1969. We heard Light Flight and Once I Had a Sweetheart. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF, award-winning hydro-powered radio. Come rain or snow or ice, we're hydro-powered. Any kind of water that flows. All right. There's another British singer-songwriter named Sandy Denny. Sandy Denny also, unfortunately, did not live as long as many people have. She died when she was only 31 years old. Nick Drake was only 26 when he had his accidental death from antidepressants. But Sandy Denny's death was due to an unfortunate accident. She fell down some stairs and went into a coma and never did really recover from that. Sandy Denny, spectacular singer, one of the most beautiful voices to come out of the British Isles, and such an amazing songwriter. Joe Boyd was producing Fairport Convention, and when Sandy Denny left that band in 1969, she formed her own band called Fotheringay. And Joe Boyd also produced their album. They only released one album in 1970 entitled Fotheringay. And we're going to be listening to two Sandy Denny compositions from that album. When Joe Boyd left England and moved to Los Angeles, Fotheringay disbanded at that point. So he apparently was very influential in the musical lives of these artists and performers. So let's hear two songs from the Fotheringay album, Sandy Denny compositions. First, we'll start with The Sea, and then we'll hear Pond and the Stream. Fotheringay.
Upon the paving. and he wanders on the run. She loves the freedom of the air. She finds a friend in every place she goes.
I'm Kathy Geary. You've been listening to Now and Then. I hope you enjoyed the music that we explored in today's program. Thank you so much for listening. Support for Now and Then comes from the community and from the Cooperage, 1030 Main Street, Honesdale. Be entertained, be challenged, be inspired. TheCooperageProject.org. It's 1 minute before 2 o'clock in the afternoon and it's 22 degrees. This is 90.5 FM WJFF, Jeffersonville, New York, and W233AH, Monticello, New York. Award-winning community radio with studios in Jeffersonville, New York, and Honesdale, Pennsylvania. We have a winter weather advisory in effect until 7 p.m. this evening. This afternoon, we've got areas of blowing snow with about 3 inches of accumulation expected, highs in the mid-20s. And tonight, we've got more areas of blowing snow in the evening.